build-up to a wedding is an immense undertaking in most cultures around the world. First is the decision to ask your partner's hand in marriage. Then it is to find a ring, before finally plucking up the courage to ask them. You love them with all of your heart, and you know in your bones that they love you too. Still, your nerves flow through you as you scan through all the possible ways in which they could say no. You ask, they say yes, and the planning of the big day begins. It has its ups and downs, stresses and frustrations. You swing from wanting a bigger wedding celebrating with all to a small, intimate affair between you both and a specifically chosen few. You have moments where the daunting realization of what you have decided to do comes to light, but ultimately, you are committed to your partner and to the wedding day. Imagine taking this journey, leading up to the day of your wedding. Imagine taking your vows and becoming wedded for what you hope to be the rest of your lives. Imagine the joy of it all. Imagine the delight in the celebration as you share your first dance. Imagine you got this far, only for it to crumble into tragedy before the night's end. I'm Luke Mordew, and this urban legend is Bride and Seek. Cold feet is a term that many fear on the day of their wedding, whether it be themselves or within their partner. It is said that 20% of weddings are called off before the ceremony can go ahead, and it is not unheard of for the day itself to bring those now or never thoughts to the forefront of our nervous minds. Those of us who have not experienced the rare but not unheard of occurrence of being left at the altar can only imagine the heartbreak and confusion that the one left behind must feel. Trying to come to terms with the embarrassment of being left so exposed and so publicly in front of friends and family. I imagine you would, quite rightly, require some answers as to why it was left until the last moment before cancelling the wedding. You would need to understand what had changed, what had been said or done that you seemed to have missed. We are all complex, confusing creatures in our own rights, and there are many factors included in the explanations into why these events occur. Sometimes these explanations come, sometimes they do not. But what if your missing spouse was unable to explain away where they had gone to and why? What if, once they had vanished, they were never seen again? In my telling of the story, Monica and Susie are now merry from their glasses of champagne as they mingle with friends and family during the after-party of their wedding, tired, but excited and ready for their future. The day had been hot and long as the after-party of the wedding continued in the large space of the living room in the huge mansion they were residing inside. Guests stood in their suits and dresses, admiring the artwork and architecture of the beautiful building with their champagne flutes in hand, discussing how beautiful the ceremony had been and how beautiful both of the young brides had looked. The speeches had been both funny and heartwarming. The dinner had gone down well with the guests. The ceremony had been short and sweet. Both Monica and her new bride, Susie, couldn't have wished for a better day. Monica was standing beside the table that the alcoholic beverages sat amongst. A man in a waistcoat and bow tie stood behind it, pouring champagne into the glasses of the guests that gathered to fill up their insides with the warm bubbles of alcohol. She was talking to her father, the man who had paid for most of the wedding, including the extravagant location that they had booked for the next few hours. She thanked him once again, giving him a large, warm hug, full of love and admiration. He squeezed her back, telling her it was a pleasure, filled with pride and comfort. He pulled her in front of him, resting his hands on her shoulders, smiling ever so slightly as his eyes scanned her beautiful white dress. "You're a beautiful couple, inside and out," he whispered, almost embarrassed to be considered too soppy around their friends and family. Although his weakness was always his little girl, even now that she had grown to be a married woman. "Where is your bride?" he asked, scanning the room for her face. Susie, in fact, was in the building, but had snuck off from the many faces of the party. She hadn't slept as well the night before, as she was anxious the day ahead wouldn't go as planned. There was, of course, no reason to think this, but her anxious mind always managed to keep her up at night, and without Monica there to run her fingers through her hair whilst telling her it was going to be fine, her anxiety had gotten the better of her. She was overwhelmed with joy that the day had gone ahead so smoothly, and she was extremely grateful to all those that had come. She just needed a quiet moment to herself, and so she had snuck off up the large stairway that led to the second floor, sitting on the steps just outside of view from the party, listening to their laughter over the music that played below. Monica stepped out of the bustle and into the large entrance hall of the mansion, taking a deep breath as she looked up at the ceiling. It was here she noticed the white fabric gently draping over the edge of the stairway above. She smiled to herself, appreciating that they both had clearly needed a moment to take a breath. Slowly, she made her way up the stairs until she arrived at her new bride, who sat calmly with her shoes beside her bare feet. Monica sat down beside her, placing her arm around Susie, who gently rested her head on Monica's shoulder. She asked Susie if she was okay, running her fingers through her hair like she always did when she was giving her a moment of comfort. Susie explained that she was fine and simply wanted to take a moment without her shoes on. Monica smiled, squeezing her tighter before whispering, "You know, you can keep your shoes off if you want to. It's your wedding. You can do what you want." Susie sniggered under her breath before giving Monica a gentle, affectionate kiss. "You do need to come back down though," Monica added. "It's nearly time for the games." Susie sighed in an overdramatic fashion, performing the role of a stroppy teenager to emphasize her unhappiness, but still maintaining a playful manner. "I really can't be bothered to play games," she replied as Monica got to her feet. "Me neither, but it's family tradition, and my dad paid for this wedding, so we have to do it," she responded firmly, still keeping her smile. Susie clambered to her feet, grabbing her shoes between her fingers as she rose. "Fine, but I refuse to enjoy it," Susie hissed through a cheeky smile before joining Monica in their walk down the stairs. "I tell you what," Monica suddenly said as a thought shot into her mind. "If I find you within 10 minutes, you have to keep playing games with us. If I can't find you within 10 minutes, you get to sit out of every single game we play after this." Susie nodded her head, confident in her ability to hide from the love of her life if necessary, and replied, "Easy." "That's a bold statement," Monica smirked, also confident in her ability to search and find any spot Susie may be hiding amongst. "Ah, here they are," Monica's father called to the room as they both appeared in the doorway. They were now all gathered around him, waiting for the bride's arrival so it could be announced what games were to be played that night. "The first game of the night will be," he called loudly, pausing for a moment as the room waited with playful anticipation, most merry from the drinks they had been gulping down throughout the afternoon. He looked back to Monica, giving her a proud smile as he called out, "Hide and seek." The room filled with a mixture of laughs, grumbles, sighs, and groans. The rules were simple. All of those related to him and Monica were to be seekers, whilst all the partners were to hide. All of those related to Susie were to hide, whilst their partners were to be seekers. For the friends who were left, they got to decide amongst themselves who would fall under what. After a few minutes of chatter, drunken organization, and silly bickering, the countdown had begun, and several members of the party had scurried out of the room as quietly as they could as the remaining group stayed sat with their eyes closed, whilst Monica's father loudly counted down from 60. Susie crept back up the stairs as fast as she could, now thankful she had kept her shoes off as her bare feet traveled silently across the posh carpet under her toes. She gripped the shoes tightly in her hands as her little feet paced to the top of the steps, desperate to win so she could spend the rest of her night relaxing, even though she had to admit to herself she was already having some fun with it. Following her were two others, a man she did not recognize and a woman who was her cousin. They clambered up the stairs far louder than she had moved, much to her frustration as they all reached the landing at the same time. The man darted up the hall, venturing into a nearby bedroom, scurrying out of sight. Her cousin paced to her right, disappearing into the bathroom, closing the door behind her. Susie contemplated for a moment. This was a big house, but there was a surprisingly small amount of space to hide in. Downstairs, she could hear the voice of her father-in-law as he reached.
10, 9, 8.
She panicked, darting to one room, opening the door. Too easy. She turned to another, trying to open it. Locked. Now she could hear.
5, 4.
The excitable panic was setting in as she pulled open another door, accepting that no matter what was behind it was going to have to do. Luckily for her, it led to a small set of stairs leading directly up into the loft space of the mansion. She jumped inside and quietly closed the door as she heard the words.
"Ready or not, here we come."
She turned, pacing up the stairs with her dainty feet keeping as quiet as possible, her heels still dangling from her fingers as she reached the dark, dusty room that she was now amongst. She could feel the powdery-like sensation of the dirt and dust on the bottom of her feet. This room was evidently rarely used, making it a perfect place for her to hide. She could hear the footsteps of a few of the seekers running up the stairs on the hunt for those hiding behind the doors. She turned, studying the large, grand-looking wooden oak trunk that sat in the corner of the room amongst the shadow. She quickly paced towards it, skulking around behind it and crouching as low as she could. The trunk itself was huge, although all Monica would need to do is walk closer to it and she would spot Susie's glistening white dress amongst the darkness of the dust with ease. She got back to her feet, contemplating for a moment where she could go, when the thought occurred to her that she could simply get into the trunk. Monica would never think to look inside. Why would she? She placed her shoes on the floor, trying hard not to make a noise as she gripped the roof of the trunk with her fingers. She pulled hard, having to use all of her strength to lift the extremely heavy lid. To her pleasant surprise, inside was a pair of curtains, neatly folded away at the bottom of the trunk. Her petite frame would fit in perfectly, and so she took the opportunity, pushing her luck as she always did in an attempt to make Monica laugh. She climbed inside, holding the lid above her head with all of her strength as she perched herself down into a safe position. Perfect. She slowly began to close the lid, disappearing into the darkness when she suddenly stopped, remembering that her shoes were still sitting outside of the trunk. There was no point going through all this effort of hiding if the evidence of her whereabouts was going to be left behind so casually. She sighed and reached out, stretching down with her left hand to grab the shoes, whilst her right hand held the lid above her. She got them, pulling them inside, but as she did, her hand had given way, slipping under the weight of the metal and wood above her. And with that, it slammed onto her head, knocking her down into the shadow. With this large thud, the lid slammed shut as the lock of the trunk slipped back into place, locking her inside. The thud had not gone unnoticed on the floor below, causing several of the seekers to frantically fling open the doors, moving from room to room, finding the man that was hidden in the bedroom and the cousin that was hiding in the shower. Amongst these seekers was Monica, who was both playfully irritated and proud that her wife had managed to hide so well. But as time went on, everyone who had hidden had either been found or had lost interest in hiding. All except Susie. The joke had now subsided, and a growing feeling of frustration was spreading through the room as the party could not fully begin again until she was found. She was one of the main events, after all. On several occasions, they called out that she had won, but she would never call back. They would check the rooms, the kitchens, and the gardens. They had even checked the loft space itself, but no sign of her was found. An hour or so had passed, and the frustration had grown to worry and confusion. Whispers of her sitting alone on the stairs had begun to echo through the room, and the disappearance of her shoes that she was not wearing had been noticed by many watchful eyes, spread to every willing ear with every gossiping tongue. There were hours of denial from the closest to the bride that lasted long after the party was due to end. But eventually, the father of the bride had taken Monica back to their home in his car while she cried in the seat beside him, confused as to why she would leave so suddenly and in such a cruel manner, using a game of hide and seek as a perfect getaway. The hours passed, the days formed, and the months evolved to years, until it was what would have been just 2 months before their third wedding anniversary. A group of men were now standing in the loft space, emptying old pieces of furniture inside, carrying them down the stairs during the process of a complete overhaul of the building. It was two of these men that eventually walked towards that fateful chest, opening up the heavy lid to reveal the decayed corpse of a young woman in a wedding dress, her shoes still resting by her side, and a noticeable fracture in her skull. The shocked men left the lid open as they jumped back, covering their noses from the smell that still lingered inside the makeshift coffin. It was here that one of the men pointed at the lid, noticing markings of scratches amongst the wood, caused by the young bride's fingernails and the heels of her shoes as she clearly spent days trying to get out, trying to get anyone to hear her over that quiet week. The men were confused and horrified by what they had found, unsure in how this could have happened. But one thing they did know was that the sight of the corpse would haunt them for the rest of their lives, her jaw wide open, locked in an eternal scream.
All right, I think I hacked in.
We're on the air?
Shh, security's outside.
But how's my hair?
It's a radio station.
Psst. Psst. You guys hear about the Beyond the Shadows podcast with Ryan and Scott?
You guys into paranormal?
What about true crime?
How about UFOs and cryptids?
We also have mad hauntings.
We got security.
No, we don't. We're not big enough to need it yet.
No, we got security.
Hey, what are you guys doing? Get out of here! Listen to the Beyond the Shadows podcast.
Beyond the Shadows!
The woman in white, dressed in her wedding garments for what is considered by so many to be the happiest day of their lives, is an image that often appears in scary stories. In fact, this will be the first of two legends this season alone that involve a haunting tale between a tragedy and a bride. Perhaps it is the aesthetic of the white veil floating in the shadows that draws horror to its vision. Perhaps it is the extra tragedy its imagery brings. The juxtaposition of the darkness and a dress that symbolizes such a light occasion, not to mention the association with the innocence of virgin white. The tale of Bride and Seek has been told many times over the years, showing itself in various forms and guises through songs, sonnets, books, and films. In 1948, the story is briefly recapped in Alfred Hitchcock's lesser-known classic, Rope, whilst the characters look down at a trunk from which dinner was to be served. Although it cannot be said with any certainty that this horrifying tragedy has ever occurred in any real sense, there are, of course, as usually is the case with many urban legends, several places claiming it to be a story within their lands. To many and most, the tale of Bride and Seek sits on the shores of England, expanding elsewhere but sitting more confidently on the grounds of very large, very old buildings across our various counties, with numerous old houses in England laying claim to it. Minster Lovell Hall in Oxfordshire, Marwell Hall in Hampshire, Bramshill House also in Hampshire, Tiverton Castle in Devon, Exton Hall in Rutland, and many more up and down our small but rich island hold claim to a spirit that roams the halls connected to the tale of our fateful bride. The neighbours of Minster Lovell Hall claim that a wailing figure holding a light flitters in and out of the castle walls, suggesting that this spirit had suffocated on her wedding day after hiding in a classic oak upper body during a casino game night of hide and seek. Less than 50 miles away are the halls of Bramshill House, where it is claimed the spirit known as the White Lady haunts the Flower de Luce that joins the gallery, with some connecting this apparition with the tale of our tragic bride. It seems the earliest occurrence of this story found in print can be dated as far back as 1809, now over 200 years ago. It was discovered in a German newspaper, although the name of this publication seems to have been lost amongst the dust of history. The article was titled A Melancholy Occurrence and opened with an announcement of a singular and calamitous event. This morbid tale ends with the discovery of a crumbling skeleton in an old, forgotten trunk in which a newlywed bride had inadvertently locked herself in and miserably perished years before. It would appear once again shortly after, this time in the guise of a poem by the English poet Samuel Rogers, entitled Ginevra, in his book Italy, published in 1822. This was considered a black comedy of sorts, telling the tale of the unfortunate bride, now going by the name of Ginevra. Rogers himself stated in his notes that the story is, I believe, founded on fact. Though the time and place are uncertain, many old houses lay claim to it. This quote from Samuel Rogers' notes is fascinating for several reasons. Not only does it prove that this urban legend is one of the oldest we have covered so far, existing as one as back as 200 years ago, but also that even then, its existence had merged in with reality and found its feet on the grounds of several locations who claimed it to be true. This tale appeared again a few years later, spreading its tale further than it ever had reached before, as now it had arrived in the form of a song. The title of this ballad that appeared in the 1830s went by the name of The Mistletoe Bow and was written by T.H. Bailey and Sir Henry Bishop. The song proved itself to be popular, and by 1859, its solemn chanting was known to be a national occurrence at Christmas time across England. By 1862, the song was even referred to as one of the most popular songs ever written, which must be known by the heart of many readers. This legend had gripped the imagination of England's shores, inspiring further works, including a play by the same name of the song by Charles A. Somerset, first produced in 1835. In 1868, Henry James's The Romance of Certain Old Clothes featured the tale, with Susan Wallace's Ginevra, or The Old Oak Chest, a Christmas story, also covering the tale, published in 1887. Once the existence of moving pictures arrived on our shores, the opportunity to reenact the tale on celluloid did not go amiss. In 1904, a production by the Clarendon Film Company released a version of the story, directed by Percy Stowe, with another version being made in 1923 by the British and Colonial Cinematograph Company, and another in 1926 by Cosmopolitan Films. The first of these, created by Percy Stowe, is available to watch now on the BFI player with a new specially commissioned score by Pete Wiggs from the band Saint Etienne. It has been as recent as 2013 that the story has been retold when the British novelist Kate Moss reinterpreted the tale in her short story collection titled The Mistletoe Bride and Other Haunting Tales. The story is one that many try to claim as their own, emphasizing our general obsession with the morbid and tragic aspects of life. The story is strange enough to be noteworthy and yet simple enough to ring true. Perhaps this is why so many cling onto its haunting narrative. It seems that after all this time, the fascinating and haunting tale of the tragic bride is still very much locked away in the attic of our history. The legend of Bride and Seek is known under several guises around the world, featuring such titles as The Lost Bride, Bride and Go Seek, Ginevra, The Mistletoe Bow, The Mistletoe Bride, The Bride in the Oak Chest, and The Bride When You Look at the Trunk. The tale evokes such a shiver up our spines as it plays on the natural claustrophobic notion of being buried alive, slowly dying alone in the darkness of an enclosed space. The horror is heightened further by the innocence of the bride, it being a playful game on such a joyous occasion. The aspect of a bride almost always being young in age is a play on the innocence that is required to be believed in order to truly feel the dread of the events. This is made all the more prominent by the inclusion of the game Hide and Seek, a game that is so often associated with the innocent play of children. Almost every variation begins the same way. A lovely wedding, going well, full of laughter and games. Its horrifying second act is always very much the same, with the bride sneaking off into the loft space, proud of herself for finding such a brilliant hiding spot in the large trunk, only to find herself locked in. The story ventures off into similar but slightly different variants at this point onwards, with some claiming the lid had slammed shut, causing the lock to fall into place and trapping her inside for good. Others have queried just how likely it is that nobody could have heard her banging against the sides, especially if they were looking for her, which it can be only assumed would have been the case if she was stuck, desperate for her life. This notion has led to more information being added to the story, with her now hitting her head as the lid closed, leaving her unconscious inside. In this variation, by the time our tragic bride has awoken, the party has left, and the search for her has halted. An alternative, more graphic but strangely less horrifying variation is that when the body is finally found, they find her skull has been slightly caved in, meaning she had died the moment, or at least moments after the collision with her head. This makes the discovery of her body more graphic and vulgar, adding an extra element of horror, although in return, it takes away the horrifying notion of being alive and trapped inside an unintentional coffin, only feet away from those that are searching to find you. Perhaps this is why that in this version, there is an added sentence mentioned to her discovery, that being of her rotting corpse still holding a slight smile on its face, grinning at her little game of hide and seek. Our dive into the legend of Bride and Seek has been short, much like the legend itself, and yet it is full of history and retellings in so many formats. Some legends may come and go with haste, but others, like this one, are here to stay. I have no doubt in my mind that in 100 years' time, the halls of several mansions across the countryside of England will still hold whispers of the mistletoe bow. The twisted events of her unfortunate demise on what should have been the happiest of days have haunted the minds of the British for hundreds of years, and yet she still remains. A bride that never truly existed, on a wedding that never really happened, on a day that never came to pass, brought to life by the various stories told in their many guises. I will leave you with a reading of the ballad, written on the subject of this most unfortunate of brides, titled The Ballad of the Mistletoe Bow, written over 180 years ago. The mistletoe hung in the castle hall, the holly branch shone on the old oak wall, and the baron's retainer were blithe and gay, and keeping their Christmas holiday. The baron beheld with a father's pride his beautiful child, young Lovell's bride. While she was with her, bright eyes seemed to be the star of the goodly company. I'm weary of dancing now, she cried. Here, tarry a moment, I'll hide. And Lovell, be sure thou'd first to trace the clue to my secret lurking place. Away she ran, and her friends began each tower to search and each nook to scan. And young Lovell cried, oh, where dost thou hide? I'm lonesome without thee, my young dear bride. They sought her in vain while a week passed away, in the highest, the lowest, the loneliest spot. Young Lovell sought wildly but found her not. And years flew by, and their grief at last was told as a sorrowful tale long past. And when Lovell appeared, the children cried, see, the old man weeps for his fairy bride. Art length an oak chest that had long lain hid was found in the castle. They raised the lid, and the skeleton form lay mouldering there in the bridal wreath of that lady fair. Oh, sad was her fate in sportive jest. She hid from her lord in the old oak chest. It closed with a spring and dreadful doom. The bride lay clasped in her living tomb.
Urban Legends is written and produced by Luke Mordew. Research by Victoria Lebrecht, in association with Mordew Pictures. Original score by Billy Jupp, with additional sounds from Storyblocks.com. If you like what you've heard and want to hear more, make sure to click subscribe on your chosen podcast provider and delve into the mysteries of our previous and future episodes. If that's not enough for you, then join us on Patreon for hidden episodes, extra content, and a chance to vote on what legends we cover. If you have the ability to rate and review on your podcast provider, please do. Every positive review helps us climb the ladder to a larger audience. If you cannot, or if you just want to spread the word of the work we do, feel free to recommend the podcast to your friends and family. The more we grow, the more legends we can dissect. To find out more, visit lrmordew.com/podcast. Follow us on Twitter at ULPodcast, on Instagram at urbanlegends.podcast, or on Facebook by simply searching Urban Legends Podcast.